I heard that most of this.
Okay, Elvis is in the house. Mr. Leroy Mitchell has got his food. So, Leroy, I'm going to start by introducing you. First of all, thank you all for coming to our annual investor breakfast. Thank you to Tanda for doing all the organization of this and for all you do with all of our investors all year long, you know, every day. I wanted to just start by introducing a couple people. I'm Mark Zarate. I've met most of you, had a chance to talk to many of you, in fact, most of you, one-on-one at some point or at one of the conferences. But we have a number of Cinemark people here that I thought you should meet. And I wanted to start with our founder, Mr. Leroy Mitchell. Leroy founded this company in 1984. He's the executive chairman of the company as well. And we really enjoy what he does in terms of leading the board and being a tremendous support to management as well. So, Leroy, thanks for making it here. He's a legend, by the way, at CinemaCon. He can't walk down the hallway. It takes him, like, he has to plan an extra half hour wherever he goes because everybody knows Leroy from, so. Okay, and also I think everybody knows Sean Gamble, who is currently our CFO, but has also last year promoted to Chief Operating Officer. So he's got a dual role there with a very, very strong finance team underneath him that's allowed him to do that. And Valmir Fernandez, again, most of you know, he's been at these conferences before. Valmir has been with the company for, gosh, at least 20 years, Valmir?
Over 20.
And Valmir is president of International. So he's got a tremendous amount of responsibility. Brazilian, and actually came up through the ranks of our Brazilian office. He was the GM there before he was promoted and moved up to Plano, Texas. Also in the room are a couple of executives that I thought I'd make sure that all of you met. In the back table is Mike Cavalier. Mike is our general counsel. Been with Cinemark again for, gosh, 20 plus years. And been very, very involved in all of our financing that we've done, the formation of the company, and really part of the strategic team. Next to him is Philip Couch. Philip Couch is Executive Vice President of Food and Beverage. Food and Beverage is an ever-increasing part of this company. Philip came to us about 6-7 years ago from the Coca-Cola company, so he's got a great background and has applied that uniquely to Cinemark. And in the back table here, probably most of you are just meeting, is Wanda Gearhart. Wanda's the newest member of our team, and she's been here for about 13 months. She's our chief marketing officer. She came to us from Neiman Marcus, where she was a CMO there for about 7 or 8 years. The impact that Wanda has had in these 13 months is dramatic. We are in the midst of a true digital transformation of our company. She's hired some great people around her as well. We're investing an appropriate amount of money to bring us really, truly into having the ability to not only gather the data, but analyze the data, segment the data, and then use that data to personalize and talk back to our customers. So that's the group you have with you today. What the format is going to be this morning is we're going to have what I figured while you're eating, we're going to have a couple of table-setting slides. This is not a formal presentation. It wasn't meant to be that. I've just got two slides. Sean's got a couple, and I think Valmir's got one. And those are just meant to just try and maybe answer a couple of the questions and issues that keep coming up. And it'll probably only take us 20 minutes to get through this table setting, maybe only 15. And then we'll open it up, and you'll have a great opportunity to ask questions. Okay? So, with that, I thought I would just give a little bit of a perspective on the box office for 2019. It is really kind of what we expected versus 2018. In 2018, we had a great carryover year. You had Jumanji carrying over. You had The Greatest Showman ever carrying over. You had Star Wars carrying over. And then the big difference is is with those movies, it made the comparison into 19 a little bit tougher, and in 18, of course, you had Black Panther, which so overperformed what anybody expected. So we're sitting almost exactly where we thought we were going to. The industry is off 16%, in the first quarter. January was down. February was down, purely product related. March was actually up. And for the quarter, it's down 16%. This kind of is within expectation of what we thought. And then as we move forward into the second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter, each of those, we believe, from a box office standpoint, will be up. And by the time the year is over, our expectation is that the domestic box office will be somewhere in the record level that it was last year, which was $11.9 billion. Actually, I think we have a really good shot at hitting $12 billion for the first time ever. It looks a little bit like this. I'm not going to go through each one of these, but we have the opportunity this week to be meeting with each one of our studio partners, going to every one of their presentations, either in the big screen or into one of their business suites to see what they have coming. But there's a couple here that, you know, we should just point out. Obviously, Shazam opens up this week. Warner Brothers and us, and if you look at the industry tracking, looks like it's going to have a good, strong opening. And then Avengers Endgame, probably some of you know, tickets went on sale yesterday throughout the U.S. and Canada. Outstanding, incredibly strong, as expected, pre-ticket sales for that movie. And that's going to be a true tentpole. And then you get into May, and again, I'm not going to say every movie, simply because I don't want to take up that much time, but you've got Aladdin and of course, Detective Pikachu coming in April, May, Godzilla coming. Then you get into June, and you got two fantastic family titles, which play very well into Cinemark's suburban network and also Latin America network of theaters, with Pets 2 from Universal and truly my favorite animated franchise of all time, Toy Story 4. So the summer looks really good. Then in July, you got the big kahuna, Lion King. We had an opportunity to have dinner with Jon Favreau on Sunday night. And to say this movie is the real deal, I think, is an understatement. It is completely photorealistic animals in the vein of Jungle Book. I asked him, how is he distinct? How has he changed that? How has he made it more? He said the technology just from today, from where Jungle Book was, is just absolutely amazing. He says there is not a person in the world that will not think that these animals aren't truly live animals. And you're going to have people thinking, you know, how did they do that, especially younger kids. So I think Lion King is just going to be an absolute mega hit. Then into August, you have Hobbs and Shaw, which is the spinoff of Fast and Furious. That genre of movie, again, plays extremely well with Cinemark, both in the United States and in Latin America. Then as you move forward into the fall, you have It 2. Yesterday, if you were at the Warner's presentation, you got to see some exclusive footage that they had shown nowhere before. I think some of it's hitting the internet today, but they saved it for CinemaCon yesterday. And it was a phenomenon, obviously, in 2017. And I think that coming back after it's now been in the ancillaries and it's had, you know, tens of millions of additional viewers, we think it's going to be an absolute big, huge movie. Then you have Joker coming out in October as well, Gemini Man with Will Smith. And then you get into November and, you know, Disney's coming with Frozen 2. There was a time when Frozen 1 was the biggest animated movie of all time, and it was beaten by Incredibles. So you've got another gigantic family movie coming. I don't think there's a family in America, or for that matter, Canada, or even Latin America, that aren't going to want to go see Frozen 2. And then we end the year with Jumanji 2. The first one from 17 was a big, big hit. It played a long time. And then Episode 9 with J.J. Abrams coming back to direct it. So we think that the Star Wars picture in December is going to end very, very strong. So it's our educated estimation that Q2, 3, and 4 are going to be very strong. I've been in this business for 35 years plus, most of it on the studio side, looking at lineups like this, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to say it is the best lineup that we've looked forward to for the next three quarters. So we're going to give you an opportunity to ask questions in just a minute, but I think with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Sean, and he's got some very interesting things.
All right. Good morning, everybody. We've been getting asked a lot of questions about the impact on our business if on our business and the industry if the U.S. were to go into a recession, and likewise, what is the impact that streaming is having on our business? And the short answer to both is we don't believe either are having a material effect. At least we don't believe streaming is currently having a material effect, and we don't believe that a U.S. recession would have a material effect. For those of you who are at Warner's meeting yesterday, you would have heard Helen Mirren's point of view on the topic, streaming. I'm not going to quote that. We're being live webcast. But let me explain why we don't believe that either of those factors are having a material impact or would have a material impact. You've probably seen this in our investor deck. If you look over the past 40 years, this chart here shows box office growth over a 40-year time frame. And the gray bars highlight periods of recession. And you can see that there were four recessions in the past 40 years, and in only one of those did box office actually decline. In the other three, box office actually grew. So just using history as a predictor, we don't see much of a correlation between the ebbs and flows of the economy and people's movie-going behavior or box office. Rather, as we've said multiple times in the past, we believe and we see that box office is much more contingent on strength of content and other fundamental factors versus what's going on in the economy. So that really talks to a potential recessionary impact on the business. As it pertains to streaming, what we thought we'd do is, we haven't done this before, but what we thought we'd do is lay alongside box office trends and attendance trends some of the key events that have happened over time. When you do that, I think it kind of shows some interesting theories about maybe what drove some of the trends in the past, and that can give some insight into what we might expect as we look forward. If you look over really the end of the late 70s all the way through the early 90s, so almost about a 15-year time frame, attendance was flat. So there was actually no attendance growth over about a 15-year time frame from over that period. It was flat at about 1.1 billion patrons. And all the box office growth driven, see if I can get this thing to work, driven in this period here, was all due to modest price growth. And in that period, you had really the advent of the VCR. The VCR, you had the Betamax VHS wars that were going on in the 70s, and then ultimately VHS won out, and that really launched the whole VCR going mainstream and a mass adoption of this new, what we consider revolutionary technology in the home over the early 80s. So one way to look at this is, well, perhaps attendance was flat in the industry because you had this mass adoption going on in the home. But another way to think about it is there also wasn't necessarily a tremendous amount of investment getting pumped into the exhibition space to drive advances and new innovations and things of that sort. So another way to look at it is, perhaps attendance was just flat because it was flat and VHS actually didn't have much of an impact on the industry. Then you kind of enter the period of the mid-90s all the way through the early 2000s. And that's when you saw this big jump in attendance, which is shown here by this line. I should mention these lines are attendance, whereas the bars are box office. You saw this huge jump with the advent of the Megaplex, which really came into fold in 1995. And then that launched this wave of stadium seating that everybody might recall. So you had almost a decade of accelerated growth in attendance from 1.1 billion all the way up to the peak in 2002 of 1.57 billion patrons, coupled with more price growth. So this was kind of the period of probably some of the most explosive growth in box office in the exhibition space. So it shot up to that level. And then, of course, the industry overextended itself a bit. And what happened next was, I forgot to mention, you also had the internet, which really started to go mainstream in the mid-90s, which doesn't appear to have really had any effect on movie going. Then you got into the early 2000s again, and you started to go through this period of bankruptcies and consolidation. The industry overextended itself, exhibitors started going bankrupt, and with that came a big contraction in investment, you know, an extended period of contraction of investment going into the industry as all that was taking place. And that led right into the financial crisis of 2008. And in this period, obviously, you also had the next piece of revolutionary technology hit the home space, which was the DVD player. You know, the DVD player started off, it used to be at a really high price point, but right around the early 2000s was when the DVD player dropped to $100, which all of a sudden made it accessible to the masses. And you had this huge period of adoption that launched through the early 2000s as that was going on. And again, that led right into the financial crisis. So protracted investment, new revolutionary technology in the home, and what happened then is you had this kind of quick step back down in attendance over a three-year period from 2002 to 2005, back down to 1.38 billion patrons, which is where attendance really hovered for the next 5 years. Okay, so that was kind of the the trend there. And then, you know, we kind of continue forward, and you now have the next piece of revolutionary technology that hit the home, which was streaming. You know, Netflix introduced its streaming product in 2007, and it took a few years for that to kind of get going. But around 2010 was when that really started to accelerate. That started to accelerate also coinciding with we're just coming out of the financial crisis. And in that period, there was kind of another step down in 2010 in attendance to 1.3 billion patrons, which is where the industry has stayed for almost the past decade. There's been 8 years where attendance has been very stable and very flat. Over this period where there's been this mass adoption of streaming that's been taking place. And, you know, I would say in this whole period, again, ever since the early 2000s, you had almost a 15-year period of reduced investment in advancements and new technologies going into the theaters. You know, there was the introduction of the digital projectors, which doesn't really appear to have made a material effect on attendance. But, you know, this reduced effect. So, you know, obviously the streaming craze is continuing to ramp and ramp and ramp. But at least when we look at this and we consider, hey, attendance has been flat as this huge, you know, new technology has entered the home space and this mass adoption of household has been going on. And when we look at kind of what happened back in the early 80s and it was flat and it didn't appear to have much impact, this is kind of where we're drawing the conclusion that we don't see necessarily a material impact. And when you consider that now OTT services in the home are starting to reach a penetration level of almost 80% of households, the novelty of adopting these new technologies and over-indexing in behavior in the early days is starting to kind of get instituted, and people's behavior, we believe, will start to settle back into a stable position. When you marry that up with the fact that now, as you all know, over the last 3 years, all of a sudden, there's been a ton of investment pumping back into the exhibition space to make that experience far better than it's ever been, with the recliner seats, with better food concepts, with new activities to do in the theaters. Like, we're very curious to see what happens over the coming years with attendance as more and more people come back to the theater and experience a whole new experience than they may have recalled the last time they went to the theaters. One more thing, and then I'll pass it over to Valmir, who's going to talk to international. Just one more piece of insight, which we think is interesting. I don't know if you haven't seen the NATO, the Ernst & Young analysis that was done on streaming for NATO in December of last year. It's worth going to NATO's website and taking a look because we think it's fairly compelling. The big takeaways of that analysis, you know, surveyed about, I think, 2,500 people or so, and we're trying to understand their behaviors in terms of how much they stream versus how much they go to the movies. And the big takeaway was, you know, the people who go to the movies most are the people who stream content the most, and vice versa. Those who go to the movies less actually stream less. So there's this positive relationship in behavior. Basically, people who love content love it in all forms, and these two different mediums can be reinforcing. The left side of the chart kind of shows the differences of behavior based on amount of movie going and amount of time streaming. I think what's probably one of the most compelling pieces in there is the chart on the right. Of all the people surveyed, 80% said they went to see a movie in the last 12 months. There was a small portion of that group, 20% who said that they hadn't seen a movie in 12 months. And what was fascinating to me in that was of the 20% who didn't see a movie, half of them also said they don't stream. And another 20% said they only stream 1 to 3 hours per week, so on the very low end of the scale. So what that says is it's not showing that you all of a sudden have a bunch of people who aren't going to the movie and who are streaming a ton, and they're maybe trading their behavior one for the other. It just reinforces the point that these are probably people who just are doing other things. You know, they're not huge entertainment content lovers, and their behavior is consistent whether it's going to the movies or in the home. So I just thought that was, you know, worth kind of bringing up. And again, I would just encourage everybody to go check that out if you haven't seen this analysis. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Valmir, who's going to talk a little bit about international, and then we'll open up the floor to questions.
Thank you, Sean.
I think this was me.
Good morning. I was giving one table set is lighting, so I couldn't have two. So I'll leave with that. So I'll talk about our lovely region of Latin America, and I will try to address one of the questions that always come to us and anticipate a little bit the questions. Obviously, there's going to be more because Latin America is receiving a lot of attention recently. I'm going to talk about one indicator or one metric that you like a lot is what is attendance per screen. And attendance per screen in the region has been particularly interesting in the last few years. If we look at 2014, where we had a pattern similar to U.S. with a slate of films that was weaker to consumer appeal, then we move into 2015 and 16, which were really great years for us in Latin America. 2015, we fired in all cylinders. We had huge action films, Furious 7, just to give an idea, that was the highest growth in film in the history of Latin America in 2015. We had Jurassic World, Avengers, and a lot of strong family content with Minions and Inside Out working fantastically for us. But not only that, we had in 2015 11% of the industry attendance coming from local production, which is important. It's for us, it's good when it's there, but it's very difficult to predict because it's a more fragmented production industry. It's not very organized, and there are years that they're going to be there for us, there are years that they will not. But 15 was a good year in both sides. 16 was a little different, but still a great year. We had a little bit of action content that is skewed to sci-fi category, which is not very well received in the region. And we have Fantastic Beasts, we had Doctor Strange, Rogue One, and those films, they don't translate or they don't travel exactly the same way they do in U.S. We had strong family content with Finding Dory and Secret Life of Pets, driving strong results in 2016. And in addition, we also had a very strong local product flow in that year. Then comes 17 and 18 that you probably are focusing, and 17 we had a drop across just about every category. We had a flow through of weaker Hollywood content with the box office in the U.S. declining 2.5%, but we had a meaningful reduction in the quantity of animated films, and that was a reduction of almost 30%, and that for us, that's a killer in the region. And on top of that, in 2017, we had the local content dropping to 6%. So from an average of 10, 11%, local content dropped to 6% of the total attendance. And that's what I said. This is unpredictable. You don't know when you're going to have a great year. You also don't know when you're going to have a low year. So these two effects were really complicated for us. And the results were only partially impacted or offset because we had a very good horror films with It and Annabelle, which, by coincidence, are the two strong horror films for this year. So we know they work extremely well because the first It and Annabelle 2 were hits in Latin America. And then comes 2018. And I'm going to talk first on the product side. We had an even weaker crop of mid-tier family films, with attendance declining nearly 20% on this category. So titles like Peter Rabbit, Teen Titan Go, Christopher Robin, they didn't match for us movies like Emoji, Smurfies, Lego, Batman from the year before. So there was an impact. Also, the horror genre didn't work well. It was weaker with Insidious and The Nun than the year before. It dropped almost 30%. So as you can see, the drops in the genres and that's all about Latin America. The oscillations are much higher than in the domestic industry, and also a series of Hollywood films that didn't necessarily work well or resonate to Latin audiences, and like Black Panther, Crazy Rich Asians, A Star Is Born, Mary Poppins, Solo, The Grinch. All these films don't resonate to the Latin audiences as they did here. So it was an issue for us. And local content, because of one specific movie in Brazil, returned to the 10% level. This film is a film called Nada Perder. It's a religious movie. And because of its characteristic, it was a very low ATP movie, and a movie that drove very few people to our concession. So it's great to have the attendance. It's great to have additional patrons in the theater, but those are not the patrons that normally go to our theaters. So as you can see, it was a weak year, and that was not even weaker because of one product that was not the type of product that helps us the most. So a very complicated year. On top of that, because I'm pretty much covering content, 2018, we had a specific issue in Brazil. There was a trucker strike that basically took away one-third of the GDP of the year and caused a very serious impact on three or four movies in the middle of the summer flow, our winter there. And that impacted those films, and obviously it reflects on the attendance per screen of 2018. When we look at our attendance per screen, you're going to see that Cinemark has consistently surpassed the industry. So we continue to perform well, but we follow the same trends. We are impacted the same way, and then when we look at 2019, we are optimistic because the product flow it looks pretty much like 2015, and local product we expect to be at around the same level. So we are optimistic about that. We are optimistic about the horror genre because I saw the same that Mark said he saw yesterday. So we are waiting it to perform. And we see that the superheroes and the family film are back. So I would say that the worst years are behind us, and we are optimistic about 2019. As it comes to content. So thank you very much.
So with that, if we could kill the projector, and we'll just move our chairs here, and we're open for any Q&A that you may have.
If you just want to make sure that you speak into a microphone, Jennifer and Melissa will be walking around with them just since it is being webcast. Thank you.
Eric, we can always count on you.
Good morning.
Oh my, here it comes.
Dividend, share buybacks, no. Two questions for you. First, for Sean and Mark, just looking through the trade show floor yesterday, you know, there's always some neat new products that are coming out, and I think I saw five different types of 4DX type of seating. You now have Sony and Samsung marketing the LED projection systems. What are you seeing now out there that has you interested how much it might impact CapEx spending, and what are some of the products that you're seeing, and also on the concession side that you find interesting?
Okay. First of all, relative to CapEx, I think as probably many of you know, Our high watermark for CapEx was 2017 at about $381 million, and then that was reduced down in 18 to about 375. We expect, I think we gave some indication that we would see CapEx, didn't we say 303 and a quarter for this year, for 19? And and part of that, one of the biggest reasons for that is we reached kind of our critical mass of recliners. We ended the year at about 56%. We expect to be at 60% by the end of this year, and we've been able to reduce down that level of CapEx. In regards to new technologies, you know, clearly we will be continuing to add XD screens. We'll add probably 15 to 20 XD screens during 2019. And you saw that we're going to add two IMAX laser projectors, so we're going to be testing out those laser projectors. 4DX, actually, Valmir is the first to test that in Latin America, and we would certainly consider it in the U.S. We don't have any big CapEx plans for that because I think that we'll do that probably at a test phase and look and say, you know, are we getting the kind of return on capital that we want? So I wouldn't put into anybody's plan a big increase in CapEx because of that. We've got two tests going on in virtual reality, one with the Void in Plano, Texas at our flagship in Dallas, and one in San Jose, California at our big screen in Oak Ridge with Spaces. So we'll continue to look at the VR space, and we're going to look at the AR space as that technology evolves. But I don't think any of these are big, significant CapEx expenditures. You know, as our projectors come off their useful life, we'll start to move into replacing those, but we're going to do that over a long period of time. So I don't think there's going to be any huge spike relative to CapEx, and we can do that over a, you know, 3 to 8 year period as we do it. Sean, I don't know if you want to add anything, or if I answered
it completely.
I think you mentioned
food and beverage. The only thing I would say is we're constantly dabbling in different ideas in food and beverage. Most recently, we tested the Pizza Hut concepts, and that's been a huge success. We've been rolling that out considerably across the circuit, and we're always looking at different ideas and concepts, both to simplify the distribution and ease of access, as well as just new concepts. So we're looking at things here, but that's, you know, when you look at the fact that we've increased our per caps 5 to 6% per year over the last several years, and that's what goes into that, is just the constant trying and tweaking and then expanding when we connect with something that works really well.
You know, I just want to throw one. Philip Couch is in the back table there. You're welcome to ask him any questions afterwards as well. But last year we had the best food and beverage year we've ever had. We grew the business $102 million. And that was in the face of Movie Club, where we were offering a 20% discount. So he had all kinds of initiatives. We also opened our first Cut by Cinemark, which is from the ground up stone-fried pizza from original recipes, and that's a beautiful dine-in restaurant in North Dallas that we expect will continue to open additional cuts along the way too.
Thanks, and I'll say the icy margarita slushy yesterday was quite good too.
Great, so that's okay.
We got those.
And then for Valmir,
you need to try the icy Jack and Coke as well. That's a real treat.
After 5 p.m., Eric, please.
Naturally, it's always 5 p.m. somewhere. For Valmir, you know, we've heard so much in the last several years about the various consumer-driven initiatives going on in the U.S. and some stuff you already had in Latin America, but I'm curious, what initiatives are you focused on now to continue driving attendance that may not already being done in the U.S.?
I think that we are behind the U.S. in terms of some of our CRM projects, and I think there is a lot of room for us to do a better marketing in the region. We are evolving at different pace in different countries with loyalty programs and also testing subscription in one of the countries. And I feel there is a room there for us to improve attendance just by doing a more efficient marketing. As I said, the countries are very different, so they're moving at different speed. I would say that Argentina for us is the country where we are most advanced, and we are trying to push the others to move to the same level. But I think that's where I think we have room for improvement. Obviously, we are doing other things in terms of, as Mark said, I think we're always trying to test things even before domestic, because we move with more, we are more agile, we're small, so we can test things in different markets. That's why even the loungers that now have 60% in the U.S., we started before. The 4D is something that we tested, and we started there. So there's different things that we do, but I think I put on marketing as the main initiative for us.
Hi, David Karnofsky, JP Morgan. I think one of the themes of the conference that we've been hearing is that exhibitors are sort of making a pitch to Netflix, saying that, you know, they think they can help Netflix's business and get promotion for their films. I'm curious to know what you know your thoughts are on the subject.
You know, the Netflix subject is actually a relatively simple one for us, and we've been very clear with them, both publicly and privately. We welcome Netflix in our theaters. We would be more than happy to play The Irishman. And there's really only one important issue there. You know, our key product suppliers, whether it's Comcast Universal or AT&T Warner Brothers or the Walt Disney Company or Sony, they play by a certain window of distribution. Typically, it's 74 days until the home market hits with EST and then VOD. If Netflix were willing to have that same window, we completely welcome them in. So I turn the negative question of us not wanting Netflix completely to the positive, because we really do. And they're an important supplier of in-home product. They've been incredibly successful, especially in serialized television. And as they expand into motion pictures, probably many of those, they'll want to go straight to streaming. That's fine. We have no problem with that. That's their business. They bought the product. They own it. They can do whatever they want. But if they want a big theatrical release to help launch that movie, then we're going to ask for the same terms and conditions that we get from all of our major suppliers. It really is that simple. It's not this big contentious issue. We have very reasonable business discussions with them.
A couple of questions really on the content side in Latin America. Just coming, you know, from the Warner presentation yesterday and just looking at some of the trends going forward, you know, you're going to have a couple of big musicals, particularly during the Christmas period in 20 and 21, between Cats, West Side Story, et cetera. And you have Warner doing
Wicked, and Wicked's Wicked coming.
And Warner having several new animated titles in the pipeline. How do you think that affects your business? And do you have any infrastructure there for doing dynamic pricing?
Well, talking about content first, I would say, first of all, I really appreciate Warner having the diverse slate of products that they have, because that's very positive. At the same time, not always that diverse slate fits Latin America, and as I mentioned, some examples. And yesterday, I was very encouraged by the animated films. I think they're going to be great. Some of the brands are extremely well-known in Latin America. Horror, they have been fantastic for us. When it comes to some of the product that I saw yesterday, not as easy as, but it's not different from previous years. It's not that I see any issues. And again, I think we have to praise those studios that are showing a diverse slate, because I think we need that. It's not only the temples, but we need those, that kind of product. But I can see that some of the product there not necessarily translate the same way it translates into domestic. In terms of dynamic pricing, Latin America is especially complex to talk about dynamic pricing, because it's a market where you see lots of promotions going on. I would say we have a wide range of promotions in place, and we have already a very a low ticket price comparing to U.S. So we try to be very sensitive to how we're going to use that dynamic pricing, because we don't want to mess with the market and then see some players doing stupid decisions and even reducing further a price, which we need to keep pushing to beat inflation, which is not easy when you have countries with a 50% inflation a year. So I look at that. I think it's interesting concepts. I haven't seen that work in the region, to be honest with you. But it's not something that I don't want to try. I just want to be very sensitive that I don't want to mess the market.
So for Valmir, so looking at Latin America, obviously the hope is that a better political and economic climate gets new development back to where it was a couple of years ago. But looking at the average attendance per screen, you know, down at for your theaters at 68,000 versus 80 a few years ago, yeah. I know you talked a lot about the slate. Has anything happened structurally in the region in terms of competition, economy, pricing, that would prevent you from getting back to those levels in the coming years?
I would say number one is it's content. Let's say if content is there, it goes back to those years where we have particularly a good flow of animation and family content, you can see us approaching those numbers. The local product is where is the biggest question mark, because for example, even last week was a public information that the National Cinema Agency in Brazil froze the funds for production of movies. And the reason is because they were not managing the funds properly. We hope they fix that, that flow continues, the money is already separated to feed the industry. But right now, they are frozen, and that may be an impact at some point. We hope they fix that soon, because there's a lot of pressure to that get fixed. But those kind of things are more difficult to control. I don't see other structural problems other than what I mentioned last year that we had, but the industry in Latin America behaves a lot like a show. I have lived in Brazil with a big recession year where we grew 20% in attendance. It is mostly product driven, and the same way it is in the US. So I don't see structural issues. There is competition. There is a flow of an intent of us growing the market, so we go to more distant regions and to areas where you probably cannot get this so high attendance per screen. So if you want to continue grow and have healthy growth, you may do it with a lower attendance per screen, and that's going to reduce that number. I said that I had one table setting page. It's not the page that I like. It's the page that you like. So I put it there. But I look at other things. I don't look at attendance per screen only as the key metric for me. But we have to look. You like it. I think I was kidding. We need to look at that as well. But there is other elements that I think are important.
And just to kind of hit that last point that Valmir was making, that is one of the other factors that plays into the metric coming down. More of the new builds that we've opened recently in places like Central America, and even, you know, some of the smaller acquisitions we did in Brazil, they have a smaller attendance per screen. It's not that they're unprofitable theaters or poor performing theaters. It's just they're in smaller markets that tend to have a lower attendance per screen than the big, big metropolitan cities. So it just plays into the metric a little bit. But the fundamental driver, as Valmir said, is really the content profile.
Yes. This might follow up on this Latin American question a little. Valmir, a number of years ago, you at one of these events, you outlined some ambitious potential for the relatively underscreen nature of all of your markets relative to the U.S. And clearly it hasn't worked out quite that way. A number of things have gotten in the way. But I was wondering if there is any reset you might have in terms of the potential you think is achievable and over what time period, over the next 5 years or whatever, that could create that underlying updraft in the Latin American markets that I think hasn't been as – it has gotten more product-driven and that sort of thing, rather than having the rising slope that you could go on top of.
And I continue optimistic about the fact that we have a reasonably underscreened market. The problem is that we cannot drive the growth of the market by just going and opening freestandings, because that's not a reality, and the economics don't work in Latin America. Plus, you have security issues, labor issues, have a lot of elements that force us to grow with the mall industry. When you see the kind of economic and political issues that we had in the region, we have to live with the situation that the economy forced some of the malls to operate with a big idle capacity, so they're not developing new malls. If they don't develop new malls, we don't have this new theaters. I still see the potential is there. I think Brazil is definitely on a turning point. I was telling to some of you that I feel if Brazil can pull the reform of the pension funds, I think Brazil is going to get into another positive growth moment. However, that in order to get to the mall industry takes 12, probably 24 months or more. So I continue seeing Latin America with a lot of potential. The recent issues that we faced just made that potential to get delayed. So I think there is some potential there for the years, but we are going to see always Latin America having these ups and downs, which is, for me, it's always a given. We will not behave nicely like that chart that Sean showed for you. It's not us. We are ups and downs. Hopefully, the countries are going to balance each other. The problem in 2018 is our two major markets went down. I don't remember that haven't happened before. It's always one is down, then Colombia and Peru come and they're strong. 18 was the worst. I have been head of international for 12 years, and we haven't seen a year like 18. But even with a bad year, hey, we have pretty decent results. So it's that kind of thing. It's a bad, but we know how to navigate that those oscillations.
You know, Jim, I would add that Valmir makes a point that we have 15 countries there and we're able to go up and down. This is a situation where I think the right way to characterize Latin America, especially Brazil, is that we're turning the corner there. You just can't do it on a dime because it's so mall development, like he said. But I think that is the corner. We are turning the corner. But I think even more impressive that even in these difficult times, Valmir and the international team have been able to add 50 to 75 screens on a consistent basis for the past 3 years. And that's been a combination of new screens as well as acquisition. So we've been able to continue to grow even in this challenging economic time. And hopefully now, we are turning the corner, and especially in Brazil, where we feel like politically and economically the worst of that is over, that we think that it's positive. And especially looking at the lineup for 19 that's gonna play very well in Latin America.
With the recliner opportunity domestically reaching saturation, CapEx levels coming down, do your priorities for free cash flow change at all? Is there anything that you're looking to do, or is there any M&A opportunities, either internationally or domestically?
We're always looking for M&A opportunities. We tend to be extremely disciplined buyers. You know, just looking at our recent history, you know, we're not interested in paying multiples that we're currently trading at or above. And so we're very, very disciplined there. Our goal is not to become the biggest exhibitor in the world. Our goal is to be the most stable, consistent, and profitable one. and I think we've been delivering on that objective. Relative to are there other ways that we're going to be spending our capital? Yeah, we're testing a number of things. I mentioned VR. I mentioned Cut by Cinemark. We have another initiative called Strike and Reel. Strike and Reel is a joint venture with the best family entertainment company in Dallas that already operates three high-quality family entertainment complexes, and we're joint venturing with them to put a family entertainment unit with eight screens under one roof. It's going to open in the fourth quarter of this year. It's under construction right now, and so we're going to see how that goes, and we're hopeful that we can roll out more of those in success. And recliners, I don't want to give the wrong impression here. We're still doing recliners. I mean, we're not done. It's just it's the significant foot to the accelerator of 16 and 17. We did it, and we've got the highest penetration of recliners among the majors. We'll end this year right around 60, maybe slightly above it, and we feel like that's the position we want to be in. And we're it's going to continue. It'll never get to 90 or 95%. All of our new theaters that we're building all have recliners. So just naturally, that penetration number is going to go up as well as we open new theaters.
And I'll just
free
add,
cash flow?
Yeah, I'll just add to what Mark said in that, you know, we've consistently said, and we still do believe, we are investing for, our priority when it comes to all our capital allocation is to invest in the long-term success, stability, and growth of the company. So we'll prioritize that, and that's kind of what we look at first and foremost. Beyond that, you know, as we see potential for excess cash flow generation and things of that sort, you know, we'll continue to look at, all right, what does that mean? Are there different things we should be looking at doing? Like, we just increased our dividend. We've increased our dividend in the last 4 years. We just made another increase, you know, earlier this year. So we'll continue to evaluate that. But to the extent there's ROI-generating opportunities out there that are going to fold into growing and strengthening the company, that's where we're going to put our priority.
I think right over here.
So just a couple questions for Valmir. First off, the face of retail is changing differently in different regions. Clearly, we all know what's happening in the U.S. Can you just talk to the mall environment, retail environment, outside of, I mean, there's a cyclical component for Brazil, and then there may be some component of structural change from a mall perspective, and how that impacts you in Brazil and the other big four. And then one other quick one.
Okay. Well, I think we are behind in terms of the kind of impact that the U.S. is suffering in the mall industry. I think in Latin America, the malls attract a lot of people because they are a safe place for you to go with your family. They really see a mall as a leisure destination. I think not that long term we will not see a similar impact with the internet sales making an impact, but I think we're not there yet. And by the way, the most important mall owners, they are already shifting more towards entertainment, so shifting the style of the malls that they are building and their remodels to make it more appealing for people to go and spend time there. So honestly, I don't see that as a problem. I see, as I said before, the economic issues having slowed down, and with the unemployment increasing, we had we have big vacancies in the malls right now. But it's not a structural issue like we see in the U.S.
Okay. And then the quick follow-up, just on EBITDA in the region. So obviously a big hit in 18, total revenue down about 11, EBITDA down 20. So a big decremental margin. You talked about the potential recovery for content in 19. What would we see in the flow through on EBITDA from an incremental perspective? As if box office in Latin America gets back to where it was, would we see EBITDA, or is there something else that's changed there?
We try to be very consistent on our EBITDA margins, and we try to keep them at as close as possible, at around 20%. Obviously, in a year where we had that kind of hit in attendance, it's very hard to manage our fixed costs Because, for example, for us, labor is a very important component, and we don't have the same flexibility that we have here. The government's established a lot of mandatory, not only mandatory increases, but they also establish a lot of limitations on how we schedule people. So when we have this this kind of performance, then it's very hard to make those kind of costs go down. We also have issues like utilities, which is continuously being a point of attention because it moves with the dollar. And when you have those big devaluations, our prices cannot move as quickly. So situations like the one in Argentina last year was a particular difficult one because we had 100% devaluation, we have inflation of 40%, and you cannot move your prices according to inflation. So looking forward, I think it's very possible that we go back to our historical 20% margins that we have been giving the region. Yeah, that's our goal.
The rate will expand. The only other thing that's obviously been a drag on us is currency translation. You know, so we had great growth in EBITDA on a constant currency basis over the last few years, and it's just been eroded significantly by just the translation into dollars. It's not a fundamental business health issue. It's just been, you know, the way currencies have been a bit crazy, and the devaluation of these local currencies has far outstripped the benefits we're getting from inflation just in recent years. You know, the hope is that it'll stabilize and hopefully flip back and we'll get a windfall at some point. It's just been a prolonged period of kind of drag for the last few years.
I think we'll take one more question, and then we'll stay here if you have any individual questions as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is it too early to ask about the 2020 film slate and sort of what you're excited about and what could be some of the more difficult things to compare against?
We thought that question might come up. It is a little, to answer your question specifically, yes, it is a little early. We haven't seen the Disney presentation yet. We haven't seen the Universal presentation yet. But obviously, we see things as early as we can. As we're looking forward, I'd give you just a couple of highlights. Pixar's got a new movie coming, and every time, all those years I was at Disney, and I thought that maybe a rat in the restaurant wasn't going to work. Well, you know what? They did. You know, when it's an older couple traveling to South America on a hot air balloon, they did. So Pixar has never missed. Is what I'm saying. And so we're excited about Pixar. It's onward. Then you've got Godzilla versus Kong. Disney's coming out with another Mulan, with a Mulan sequel, which we're very excited about. The next episode in James Bond, which is probably the single best franchise movie in the history of the motion picture business. This will actually be Bond 25. Then you've got the next chapter in Fast and Furious, which way over delivers domestically and internationally. The next Wonder Woman coming out. Universal's bringing out Minions 2. Avatar, James Cameron has said it's coming in 2020, which obviously we're very excited about. Sing 2 is coming out. Those are just some of the highlights that we're starting to see at this point. So coming out of this convention, we start to lay out our overall calendar, and when we think about the box office for 20, we start literally at each individual title and build it up. So I'm encouraged, but it's still a little bit early. So with that, I'd just like to thank you all for coming, and again, we can stay if you didn't get your question answered, you know, from either Valmir or myself, also Philip Couch back there for any food and beverage question. And feel free to introduce yourself to Wanda Gearhart, our CMO, as well. So thank you all very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.